You may already know that SiriusXM brings you the deepest variety of commercial-free music for every genre and every mood, where you hear the biggest names in talk, entertainment, and comedy, and hundreds of hand-curated music channels designed to fit every mood.
Where you get news from every source, where you can listen to the newly launched Fish Radio, in addition to Jam On, Grateful Dead Radio, Pearl Jam Radio, Tom Petty Radio, and many more. Where you can listen to top comedy channels such as Kevin Hart's Laugh Out Loud Radio and Netflix's A Joke Radio, and sports talk radio from Barstool to ESPN and more, to keep you up to date on the latest news in the sports world.
Most people think you need a car to enjoy SiriusXM, but you don't. Subscribe now to listen outside the car on your phone, online, and at home, and get your first 3 months for just a dollar. And if you're a Fish fan, which you probably are, you can get tour updates and shows being played, which are a good complement to our quick hits. Visit SiriusXM.com/HFpod to see offer details and to subscribe and start listening today. SiriusXM, no car required. Hey, everybody. The Helping Friendly Podcast, episode 160. I don't know why I keep saying the number. Matt, Jonathan, what's up, guys?
Hey.
Howdy, howdy.
If anyone listening cares about the number, can you just tell us?
I care about the number.
Not you, dude.
No, but I care.
Okay. All right. That's one for caring. Matt is fresh off a trip to Colorado from seeing the Fish band.
I'm back.
He's back.
I made it.
Jonathan is still in Virginia.
Yay.
And I'm back too, but not from Dick's. All right. I was actually with Brad this weekend, and unfortunately, he didn't make it off the houseboat from Lake Powell. And he's going to be living out the rest of his years on a houseboat on Lake Powell. So he sends his regrets, but he's looking for a satellite hookup to see if he can maybe join one of the, you know, future episodes. But I thought you guys would want to know that.
I'm sorry to hear that. He's is he on the boat still, or is he just like floating with a raft or a preserver or something?
His definition of boat is broad.
Okay. I don't know what that means, but I'll take it.
All right, so Matt, we obviously want to get your thoughts on Dick's, of course, but maybe before we do that, is there anything going on in the Fish world besides the fact that they just played a bunch of concerts?
Well, there was that killer weekend at Lock-In right before Dick's, which I don't believe we've convened since that happened, which was kind of a you snooze, you lose sort of thing. I think attendance seemed to be low. A lot of people didn't go. I wanted to go and couldn't make it despite the fact that it was 2 hours away. And we all missed out because you got a killer Trey sitting with Krungman. You had a killer Derek sitting with Tab, and Susan sitting with Tab. And then the set that I will be forever kicking myself for missing, the Tedeschi Trucks Band with Trey playing one of my all-time favorite albums, Layla and Other Assorted Love Songs, which if you have not heard or seen it, is absolutely mandatory viewing and listening because it was amazing.
But that's one of my all-time favorite albums. How can it be yours also?
I'll fight
that's
you for
so
it.
Weird. I've had my copy longer.
It was a hell of a weekend. I heard rumors that the attendance was down. Is that like that's in the rumors? But does that seem to be true, Matt?
Everybody that I talked to who was there said that it was extremely low attendance compared to other years.
Well, that's really too bad. I mean, I should have been there, but had reasons. But as soon as they announced the official, like there would be crossovers with Trey and Tedeschi Trucks and whatnot, I knew it was going to be a heater. And the rest of the lineup was really good too. We had, the O'Teal and Friends set was really good, really dreamy. Bobby came out and played Weather Report. I think it might be like the first in 5 years that he's done. I don't hold me to that, but I couldn't find any evidence that he's done it recently. And, Circles, J-Rad, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's good music all around. I listened to a lot of it while I was working. So,
Yeah, it's a good festival, and it's a great site, great setup. I know we've all been there in various incarnations, and definitely would encourage people to go in the future. I think the funny thing about this is that regardless of what the lineup is next year, I think you'll see a lot of people there just because of the reminder from the Layla set that this is a festival where those types of things happen. And good on, you know, Pete Shapiro or whoever it was who got those guys together and also convinced them to do the most on the nose thing that they could have possibly done. Which is, it's one of those things that like every Halloween people are like, oh, do Layla with Derek Trucks. It's like, well, you know, shit, he made it happen. It's amazing.
Damn it.
I would give that entirely to Pete Shapiro. Right.
Yeah. I mean,
I think he pulled it off.
Probably.
I think he's orchestrating that festival to do what most of us jam band fan lovers want festivals to do, which is to really get the bands to mix up and play together and and make new music, things, you know, once in a lifetime experiences.
Yeah.
Which some other festivals are definitely after, but he's really hitting, he's really doing it.
So we'd be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that Lock-In, that Oteil and Friends set, I think was Neil Casal's last public performance, Jonathan, yep. Right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Jonathan and I and others are trying to pay tribute to Neil on other podcasts, which we'll link to, but terrible, terrible loss, but we'll, remember that and remember the music. Guys, what else is going on in the music world?
Vida Blue is about to drop an album and tour. So I know we've talked about it a little bit, but that's happening, right? Like real soon. I'm actually going to see them, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, week after next, and we'll all be at the 9:30 Club, right?
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope I'm there. I want to go. Can I go with you guys?
Sure.
Cool. All right, that's that. what else, Matt? There's some news about Trey?
Yeah, so he's doing this event at the Grammy Museum in L.A. They're going to show Between Me and My Mind, and then they're going to do a little Q&A and a small acoustic performance from Trey. So that's kind of cool if you're in Southern California, maybe trying to make up for the lack of Phish shows out your way this year. That could be a cool event to attend. I know if I were out that way, I would certainly be doing it, so check that out as well.
Cool. All right. So, guys, anything that you all have been listening to recently that you want to tell people about from Osiris? I have one thing. I want to just say if anyone else had anything first.
The Tapes Archive.
Yes.
It's fantastic. If you haven't, I think a lot of you probably checked it out because of the Trey interview that dropped, but the, don't sleep on the interviews with Billy Joel and George Carlin. I thought it was funny in the Billy Joel, interview. So this is 1993 that he's interviewing Billy Joel. And, he was asking, Billy about like what he thinks of like the current bands coming up and stuff like that. And he just went on and on about how great he thought it was that all these bands were doing this grassroots thing and building really, really loyal fan bases and not relying on radio play and, you know, MTV and all this stuff. And he's like, you know, there's these acts are making it about the live show and people are coming out to see them. And I just think it's great that they're doing that. So you never know. I mean, maybe there's not as much of a made up rivalry as you might think that there is.
I will say about that interview itself is that I think Billy Joel comes off pretty well in a way that, you know, I'm not a big Billy Joel fan, but I really liked what I heard from him on that.
And that's, I mean, that's the kind of thing that I think is so, and we did this, people who are tuning into Helping Friendly Podcasts probably heard the episode that we dropped in here, the Trey interview, but all of them are like these moments in time, you know, they're like snapshots of moments in time. I just think it's really cool and looking forward to hearing the rest. I know there are a bunch of awesome, guests coming up on those. Matt, you were in Colorado.
I was in Colorado for a week. It was magnificent.
What was it like out there?
Dry and hilly. Yeah. lots of, plague infested, canines running around. I don't know if those are canines or not, but no, it was great.
They're rodents.
They're rodents. Okay. Rodents. Yeah. It was a good time overall. We had a great vacation, family vacation, whole family went out there, got to see lots of friends. We have a ton of friends in Denver, so it was awesome to see lots of people there. Lots of other fans from, the internet and HF Pod fans and whatnot. So that was cool. And then, those of us who went out a little early also got the nice bonus of a J-Rad show at Red Rocks, on Thursday. So that was pretty awesome too. And, going back to the, to Neil Casal and his untimely death, that whole show basically seemed to be, one huge kind of tribute to Neil. A lot of the playing, they played Cats Under the Stars, which he had sung with O'Teal and friends. They did a killer version of Birdsong, replaced the lyrics. All I saw, I know is something like a bird within him sang. Very emotional band. And then Broke Down Palace at the end where I don't think there was a dry eye in the house when they played that. So in addition to the, listening recommendation for the lock-in stuff, check out that J-Rad set. It was really one of the best sets I've seen them play overall. And then we got to see Fish for 3 nights at Dick's, which, what can you say about that? It's one of the best experiences out there.
So Matt, in terms of the Fish stuff, it seems like there are, a lot of people who were saying like, yeah, it was like kind of like summer, good, not great, some highlights. And then a couple other, we asked for people's kind of reactions on Twitter. And one thing that I thought was interesting is from our friend Alex, 215 Music. He said the band has matured immensely emotionally and musically with an ever-expanding catalog. It's no longer all about the notes and 20-minute jams. Hopefully fans pick up on what they're doing and don't have expectations on anything. So it seems like those are kind of like the two opposite reactions. Do you fall on either side of that great divide?
I think that's a pretty good summary. I thought the shows were a lot like the rest of the summer. They were good, not great. But the moments when they were great, they were really great. I mean, the high points of the jams were great. I think, as far as that last comment, I could definitely understand that. I've reached the point now where, like, particularly this year, my show going experience is really impacted by like the whole overall show and the flow and like the kind of top level feeling that I come away with rather than scrutinizing a lot of little details. So when I look at the weekend overall, I'm like, yeah, those were, very good Fish shows. If I start to get in and scrutinize, like when I was re-listening and stuff, then I start to see some of the cracks in the foundation and like, stuff that was on re-listen or when you're not there in the moment was not quite as exciting, and jams that were not quite as interesting as I kind of felt in the moment. But overall, I think the other thing I've seen from a lot of people who even there are some people that are kind of panning these shows, but everybody seems to agree, it was still a great weekend. I mean, Dix is a great place to see the band. People were there from all over, lots of reunions of friends all over the place. The plague thing really did not put a damper on it at all. There was still Shakedown. Where there's a will, there's a way, and where there's a wook, there's a way. You're going to have Shakedown no matter what. And, the parking situation, which I was kind of bugging about, like it was fine. There was plenty of parking on site. Everybody still met up with their friends. Everybody still got to their spot in the stadium and it was all easy and friendly and fun. And, like Dick's always is. So, I think it, came away for me at least with a very, very positive experience.
Jonathan, did you stream the shows or did you just listen back after?
I was in isolation for the first couple nights, and then I did watch the third night live and stayed up and watched the whole thing despite the time zone irregularities. And I went back and listened to the other two, and I think I don't think there's a Providence 94 in the batch, but there's some really good playing and there are some exciting jams that we should get into it.
We should. And I think one thing that we'll hear throughout, I think, as we talk through the shows is something that that our friend Will Rubenstein, who was on HF Pod Plus, actually, he said it's clear how they subscribe to the Yoda philosophy pushing ahead, making new art after 35 years, do or do not, there is no try. But it seems like they're really focused on like integrating this new material, right? It's like, the set lists look different from, I mean, most of the set lists look different from even some stuff we saw this summer, but they're just always pushing forward, which is cool. So let's talk about that as we push forward to night one.
Yeah, so just keep this in mind. I didn't realize this until somebody pointed it out to me the last night, and I think it held, with the exception of 2001, if you count it as a cover, which you probably should, no covers, all original material, you know, although some of it was from Ghost of the Forest, and that Scandinavian band, Casvald Voxt, and no Gamehenge songs at all.
Hmm.
So the material, oh, wow. I haven't looked at like the album breakdown or average, I forget what Scotty calls it, the average vintage or something like that.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. I think it's all probably pretty modern. I mean, they were very, very like new material heavy set lists. But at the same time, that didn't bother me at all. I felt like the mood was right and they were playing the songs that they wanted to play.
Yeah, and sometimes you can't really get that unless you're there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The recording, sometimes it doesn't come through. And we should talk about that, because I think the first set of the first night, to me, listening back, and I didn't see any of them because I was out of cell phone range for the whole weekend, but it sounded like they were just trying to kind of get their sea legs under them in set one, with a couple jams in there, but for the most part, sort of just trying to figure it out. Is that what it felt like there, Matt, or did it feel like they were already hitting?
Yeah, it felt like a warm-up set to me big time. I made that comment at set break that night, which is unfortunate when you only have six sets, but not surprising when they'd had that much time off. I think probably my only critique of the band for the weekend is that while I think the predictions of Trey being really on because of all the work he put in for the Layla set and you know, trying to show off in front of Derek and Mark Spear and all these guys at Lock-In, it was definitely true. His playing was phenomenal all weekend. The band seemed like they were not hooked up from the get-go. I wonder if they did any rehearsing at all. Although they did like a nice long jam and sound check. So that may have been, you know, the extent of what they did. But they seemed like in that first set, like they were trying to get their legs under them. They were trying to just kind of warm up. I thought that set was the weakest set of the weekend. But then it was followed up in set two with what I thought was the strongest set of the weekend. So it didn't take them much to get there.
Yeah, I don't think they practiced Train Song for sure.
Yeah.
Jonathan, what'd you think of set one?
Not mind blowing. I think you guys kind of covered that well, settling in, warming up, sea legs. I will say I really like the wingsuit. I know a lot of people don't like that song at all, but I do like that song, and I thought this was a nice, strong version of it. But it's not a jam that requires as much locking in so much as Trey going off. So he did that, and it's pretty rad. So and there's a couple little, you know, there's a couple things in there that are entertaining. But the second set, I mean, they get right into it with Everything's Right and Mercury, and it gets deep. I think Matt should tell us more about it, though, rather than listen to me.
Yeah, I mean, so set two, you know, Everything's Right into Mercury was maybe the high point of the weekend, or at least one of the high points of the weekend. That was the first spot where we were all kind of like locked in. I mean, that was, you know, 40 minutes straight of mostly improv, which was fantastic. I think Mercury continues to be my 2019 MVP. Everybody was super stoked when they started it, and the jam was great. Another Fishman and Mike led jam. Mike was out in front kind of leading the band a lot this weekend, throwing out a lot of really, really good ideas, particularly in this set. I would not be surprised if he comments later that this was his favorite set of the weekend, because he was really out front for a lot of that kind of stuff. Thank you. And then you had Shade, which I don't love, you know, especially when you put it in a cooldown spot in the middle of the second set, which tends to happen. But then the Light after that was really good, and they did like a proper Party Time segue. I know they've tried that a couple of times in the past, but this time they actually did play the song, and it was a nice segue, and definitely got the whole place rocking when they went into that.
If I could interject, I love Shade, first of all, and I thought it was nice to play Shade into Light. I think there was a deliberate pairing of those two items right there, and I enjoyed listening to that in the car. I wasn't at a show, so, you know, cool down songs or what have you, whatever you want to call them, they definitely have a different effect when you're listening at home versus when you're at the show. So it worked fine for me at home. And yeah, I'll second the transition into Party Time was outstanding. I thought that was, you could hear it coming, but they didn't overly rush it. And it was great.
Yeah, I really like Shade. It's grown on me a lot. It's becoming more and more meaningful to me every time I hear it. It's just, man, such a good song. But I'm not going to say that it was the right song for you at the time, Matt, but I do think it's a good song. Everything's Right in a Mercury, 42 minutes. Pretty solid 42 minutes of music, and that the groove in Mercury, I don't know, like the, you know, there's that part where they, after the composed part, where they sort of get into the, a little bit more of an, of a type two jam, and it was very upbeat and very like cool and happy for a long time. But before that, and in Everything's Right, there was all kinds of crazy stuff going on. Maybe that's probably the kind of mic driving, segments that you were talking about, Matt.
Yeah. And Mercury, they, I think one of the things that's been cool this year is in previous years, the jams all sort of started the same way. They would sort of, you know, play around with the theme, modulate to major, and then go somewhere else. And this year they've all felt like they've been very unique in terms of where they go once they start the jam. So I think that's what's one of the things that's making them really exciting. And yeah, I mean, you're right. And that's just a killer segment to start out that set.
So the Light, I think, is maybe where people's expectations got the best of them. 'Cause that song, particularly at Dick's, you're expecting maybe that closes out the whole set, right? Maybe it's like a 20-minute Light and it's a 4-song set or 5-song set or something. And they just, they took it, you know, 7 minutes into Party Time. And I think the transition was good, like you said, Matt, but I wonder if that kind of led to people not thinking that this set was as good as it could be. But the second half is really good. There's like some really good stuff after the Light into Party Time.
Well, yeah,
I mean, the sand.
Really, I mean, like you know, you take Shade out of this set and look. I mean, it's just like
no, bad move.
Take it out and it's balls to the wall for the entire set. I mean, that's a crazy, crazy set. I mean, I get putting a cool down in there, and if you like Shade, that's fine. You know, it would be good for you. But I mean, for me, it's like you take out that like 6 minutes, and it's a damn near perfect set. But the Light thing, I don't know. I mean, I caught wind of that later, that like people weren't digging it because it wasn't super long or anything. And like, I was shocked. I mean, I went back once I heard that comment and kind of looked at the time and I was like, oh, I guess it was a little short, but like, I don't care. I mean, the segue and the energy was there to take them into party time. So do what needs to be done there. You know, don't just look at lengths or whatever. And yeah, I mean, it's got a lot to live up to because there's been at least two incredibly epic versions of Light played at Dix. But I mean, that doesn't mean that you have to do it there every single time. That's kind of boring and predictable.
Yeah, they're not all going to be 20 minutes. It's just, that's the way it is. Sorry.
So
facts. Kids, I told you I'd bring facts.
Kids, you should get out your notepads and take notes about expectations because this is what happens. But that's why there's a 3.7 rating on Fish.net. And Jonathan, I know you love the ratings on Fish.net. But I know it's interesting. But Matt, the back half of this with Sand, and it was Sand with these like amazing, really peaking, it sort of reminded me like the first two peaks or something at the end, you know? And then that, what's the use? The exact opposite. And then a very atypical hood. It was just kind of a cool three songs.
Yeah. Sand, as you said, was super, super peaky. That was great. I was, I'm getting a little bit persnickety about the placement of What's the Use in the past couple of years. Cause I think when it's placed properly, it's one of the most powerful tools that they have in their entire arsenal. But when it either comes from like a dead stop or feels like it's just forced, kind of like a ripcord out of a jam, I get a little bit frustrated, which it felt like that's what kind of they did out of Sand here. However, they made up for it with, this is maybe one of the most atypical versions of What's the Use ever. We've all gotten, since Magna Ball, accustomed to looking forward to the quiet section, and hopefully people are on their best behavior and you can see how quiet the audience is going to get. But what happened then was, and I don't know, it was some combination of Mike and Paige played for over 2 minutes these low end growling synth noises that basically made it sound like the earth was splitting open, and you could just hear like this collective like oohs and ahs in the crowd. Everybody was just like mind blown by this whole thing, and you could see Trey kind of looking over at Paige and kind of egging him on to like keep doing it. I thought that was awesome. Seek this out and listen to an audience recording of this What's the Use, because you'll really get the low end and the vibe in the crowd when they did that. But it was insane.
Yeah, totally. And then the hood to follow was like sort of a different kind of hood as well. Not your typical like building to a Blissful Peak hood, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, they've done these kind of non-linear versions of hood a bunch in the last couple of years, which I really dig. I like when they kind of go off the rails a little bit. This was different because usually they kind of awkwardly struggle to bring it back into the hood section, because if they get towards a big, you know, Bliss Peak, it's hard to like dial that back to the hood groove and kind of build up again. What they did this time instead was they built it up, and Fishman was playing this like driving rock, almost like punk rock beat, and instead of like shifting, they just went with it, and it was like the most energetic hood climax in maybe 20 years. I mean, it was insane, and people were just going ape shit all over the stadium at this just, you know, super like punk rock version of hood, which was awesome and just brought the set to like a heroic closing. So definitely another high point of the weekend for me in that Harry hood.
Yeah, there are a couple others that you should check out. They're similar. If people want to hear similar hoods, there's 8513 from Hollywood, 7114 from Great Woods, and I think maybe one, yeah, and Randall's Island 14 as well. All similar like that, but it doesn't happen that often. So cool that you got that and to take it back to the peak. And then Freebird solo, Say It to Me Santos. It all works. All right, before we get into night two, quick message from Mint Mobile. If you're still using one of the big wireless providers in 2019, have you asked yourself what you're paying for? Between expensive retail stores, inflated prices, hidden fees, you're being taken advantage of because they know you'll pay. And you might not know how not to pay. That's part of the problem. Anyway, Mint Mobile provides the same premium network coverage you're used to, but at a fraction of the cost because everything is online. Mint Mobile saves on retail locations and overhead because it's all online, and then they pass those savings directly to you. As I mentioned in the previous ad, when I recently switched phones, I was really nervous about it because I thought I was going to have to do a lot of stuff, including math, which Jonathan and I don't like. And I didn't... I didn't have to do meth or anything. I just got a SIM card and I put it in my phone. I turned my phone back on and it was pretty awesome. And the service has been great. So Mint Mobile makes it easy to cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month. Every plan comes with unlimited nationwide talk and text. And with Mint Mobile, you can stop paying for unlimited data you'll never use. So you can choose between plans with 3, 8, or 12 gigabytes of 4G LTE data. I haven't had that problem. I've actually overused the thing, so I need to change that. But it's really easy to upgrade, too, if you need more. So you can use your own phone. You keep your phone number, all your contacts. Nothing happens. You just get better service for less money. So if you want to get a new wireless plan starting at $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/HFpod. All right. Night two. Dicks. They played again. Nobody died again, Matt?
As far as I know. I don't know how long the plague takes to set in, so I don't know if this is the kind of thing that we should be like monitoring people for a couple of weeks.
How are you feeling?
I don't feel like my blood is congealing, so I think that that's probably good.
I think that's generally a good thing.
It's probably a good thing. Somebody should check on that front row dog. I'm a little concerned about that thing getting eaten by fleas.
Yeah.
Well, if you take your dog to shows, you got to assume the risks. You know what I mean? I leave my dogs at home for concerts.
I do have to say, I was surprised that people were not selling Fishman Donut flea collars on Shakedown.
Yeah.
That was a huge missed opportunity for somebody.
You know, Fish waited so long to announce the parking changes and all of that, that I think that it's really Fish's fault that nobody had the lead time to develop those fascinating and fabulous products.
So
there were some good stickers and stuff going around. My wife got a sticker that said Prairie Dog Lives Matter.
Oh, nice. Wow. There you go. Yeah. See, we're just forgetting about the prairie dogs and only paying attention to the humans as usual. All right. So the set one of night two is really all about the ghost. Are there other things that you would talk about before the ghost, Matt?
I thought, you know, the first set on Friday was the weakest set of the weekend. This one would give it a run for its money if it weren't for the ghost and tube section. Otherwise it was a relatively boring set. Moment Dance started, it was like really, really slow. They had trouble getting into it. You know, Access Me was really cool to hear. I enjoyed that. I love that song. So that was nice. Funky Bitch had some of that super hot Trey playing. You know, he's primed to play the blues right now after playing with Derek. But it's all about the ghost and the tube. They were really fantastic.
I want to second that Access Me is, I mean, that's the bust out you didn't know you wanted, right? I mean, I'm not sure if it's technically a bust out, but you know, it's not something that you were looking for, but it's a great song, and I thought they did a nice job. And Ghost Tube is killer. That Ghost Jam is out of this world. And yet, like, it's not quite micro, but it's definitely not macro. You know, it's just another one of these super high quality first set ghosts, which we love. I love, and I'm just assuming everybody else does, because if they don't, there's something wrong with them. And then we get, if that jamming wasn't enough, we got a nice, like, kind of a mid-length tube, not too short, but not overextended. And it's delightful. And I think the placement of Mountains in the Mist right there is pretty good.
Yeah, I like that agree. Placement. I think it was really good. I actually really liked this, like the set, you know, from Ghost onward. I thought it was really solid. The Ghost jam itself, I think you can hear Trey seems to be kind of powering the jam early on. It's like usually a ghost jam, especially something that's like 15, 20 minutes, you hear a little bit of like build up, but it seemed like they were just like really, really powering the jam with like 4 to 5 minutes in. It was much earlier than I usually hear it. I don't know if that makes sense, Matt, but that was sort of what I was thinking.
Yeah, I thought it was a much different ghost than we've heard recently. They all tend to be very kind of bliss jam peaky in the past couple of years. This had some different stuff that I haven't really heard from them. You start out with little drummer boy teases from Trey, and Mike comes very, very close to teasing the wheel. If you listen to him, that's one of those places where I felt like he was kind of coming out in front and trying to lead the band. And then there was this this thing that happened throughout the weekend, I heard it a bunch of times, and I think it was most prominent in the Ghost Jam. We talk a lot about like the modulation to major keys, which tend to lead to the bliss jams. And I know some people have kind of like, they kind of groan when they hear that modulation now because they feel like they're just sort of falling back on the, on, you know, the same tricks or something like that.
Yeah.
What I heard a handful of times was either Trey or Paige trying to take the jam into major and Mike holding back and throwing in some minor thirds and stuff like that to try to keep the tonal center minor. And this was, there was almost like a struggle back and forth between the band. And I couldn't identify, like, it sounded like there was like a, I don't know if there was like a mode that they were jamming around, like an Eastern mode, like Phrygian or something like that, that that they wound up in, or if it was just a tug of war between major and minor. But for a couple of minutes, it's kind of this like back and forth, and it sounds very odd because, you know, it's like Trey plays a major thing and then Mike plays a minor thing, and it kind of adds a lot of tension to the jam before it kind of breaks loose and they start building up after that. You get some amazing synth sounds from Page all weekend. I mentioned the thing in What's the Use, but this Ghost was another section where he had some really cool synth tones. Guessing maybe he's been, you know, practicing some new sounds for Vita Blue Tour, since he tends to go a little bit more outside of the box with that band. But in any event, really, really cool tones, and very non-typical Ghosts for what we've had. Almost closer to like what you'd hear in Mercury or Piper recently, just like groove oriented jamming. One of the high points of the weekend for sure.
I thought I was hearing a lot of new sounds from Page all summer, but maybe these were even different than the summer. It just seems like he's much more active or louder or something, but maybe it's a combo.
Yeah,
he has new sounds.
He had a new synth, I think it was like a new Moog that he has been touring with this summer. So it could just be as simple as he's had time to explore it and he's discovered some new patches and stuff that he wasn't playing around with before.
Yeah. And the tube after the Ghost gets to like the blissful peak that the Ghost didn't, which is kind of interesting. I don't know if the tug of war between the minor and major key Trey won out in the tube, which is pretty cool. But I really like the Mountains in the Mist and the Drift While You're Sleeping. I mean, the Ghost of the Forest songs, they can play them all the time. You know, it's fine with me. But Matt, what's the vibe like with all the Ghost of the Forest songs at Dix?
I think people are really coming to embrace them. I think the band is a lot tighter at playing them, particularly Drift While You're Sleeping, because they've played that the most. So it's a great set closer. Where I think people really, really got into it, if we peek ahead to night three, Sightless Escape, which was a debut, and then I felt like Life Beyond a Dream, because of the version at Lock-In, that amazing version that had Susan Tedeschi on lead vocals, I heard a lot of people commenting on how they kind of get that song now. And that was one that I would have, especially in the encore, I would have expected people to kind of not pay attention as much, but people were really locked in when they played that. So I think the Ghost of the Forest material is really catching on at this point.
That's cool. Just to go to that encore, I swear I checked the show notes like twice, because the backing vocals on Life Beyond the Dream were so good. I was like, wait, was Salise Henderson up there? The band kind of nailed it, which was just like really cool. I was like, is Hartswick up there or Salise? Anyway, all right. So the Ghost was awesome. Good closing to the first set, but otherwise, you know, maybe kind of average. And then the second set, I thought was like, I didn't really get this set, mostly because like I got confused with the big Down With Disease in the very middle of the set. But I think that's just me. Matt, how did this set unfold for you?
Yeah, it was good. I think overall, this Saturday night was my least favorite of the three nights. Now, this is one of those things where you have to think about like intangibles and experience and stuff like that, because I heard several people say that they thought Saturday night was their favorite of the three nights. For me, I think if there's some sort of outside, you know, influence on it, I was sober this night. I was driving, and I was very, very not sober the other nights. So maybe that kind of skewed opinion a little bit. But I found it a little bit more difficult to get into the whole show. Not that I didn't like it, but I didn't hear a lot of the huge moving peaks that I heard on the other nights. So I think, you know, this set two was good. What bothers me about it, if you can say that, is it kind of falls off a cliff in the fourth quarter. But you know, otherwise there's some good stuff, particularly the Down With Disease. Jonathan, what did you think when you listened?
You know, I listened to this set several times and it kind of passed me by, except for the Down With Disease. To me, that the whole set hinges on that. Slave was good too, but like, I know I started this set multiple times, and aside from the kind of stumble into the very beginning of Mike's song, none of it stuck. So I don't know if that's me. I don't know if that. I'm sure some people out there loved it. I know there was some jamming. They didn't finish Weekapaw, but to me, the thing really just centers on the Down with Disease.
Yeah. I think out of the like 16 times that Set Your Soul Free has been played, this was maybe like the least exciting of any of them, which is sort of interesting because it's just turned into, maybe not. I mean, there have been a couple first set versions, but it's usually such a big jam vehicle over the past, what, year and a half that you've like, that you come to expect it. But this sort of like seemed like they were searching for something, which maybe they found in the Down with Disease. The jam was really interesting in that disease, I thought. And even though they play Disease at every show that I'm at, I still, I really like this. And it sounded for a while like Fishman was like playing the drums from Timber, or he was like trying to go into it or something. And that like kind of changed the whole
right.
jam, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, I think everybody around me on the floor definitely thought that they were going into Timber for a while. And I feel like Trey even tried to get them there, and it just didn't happen. There were too many things that happened, key change and rhythm and downbeat and stuff that had to happen in order for them to get there, and so they just never made it. But there was some really cool stuff in that Disease, although the composed section of Disease was not good. I mean, Trey tried to come in on the solo, like where the bridge goes, and it was a little bit of a mess. But once they got to jamming, it was really cool. There was this rhythmic pattern that Trey was doing around 6 minutes in that reminds me of kind of the helicopter, I would call it, section of the Alpine Valley Ruby Waves, where he was doing those kind of like rhythmic muted strings with his delay pedal. But he's doing it with like a run of notes here that kind of accelerated things and got him going. There was the, you know, almost getting into Timber, and then when they didn't go into Timber, it sounded to me like they went back into the Weekapog jam. And I was, if I had written the set list, I would have noted it as Down with Disease back into Weekapog, into NICU. There was a very, very awkward segue into NICU. And that's where things start to fall off for me a little bit on this set. But I think if you take everything from like the Weekapog through the Down with Disease / Weekapog reprise, it was really good. Like that portion of the set was great. It's just the beginning and the end were just kind of, you know, standard.
I liked the bug, the drop in the bug out of NICU. I thought it was great. It would have worked like really perfectly straight out of Down with Disease, but just they weren't there. But I always liked that song coming out of a jam. And then the Wedge, Slave, Brian and Robert, Character Zero. And I think that was sort of like a, I don't know, you know, if you like rocking out, Character Zero is a good encore closer, but maybe people were left with a little, you know, wanting a little more.
I have no problem with Character Zero. I've seen it a couple dozen times, and I love it as a show closer. I love it as a set closer. It's rocking. It's fun. It's exciting. I mean, you know, that's fine. The one thing I will say about this show, even though it was my least favorite, it wasn't a Saturday night special. You know, you didn't have,
there you go.
They have a tendency to do that sometimes, especially at, you know, obviously various places, but even at Dick's, where they play a lot of great shows, a lot of times the Saturdays are like not nearly as good as the Friday and Sunday. And I think there was a lot more parity between the three nights this time. So I have to hand it to them for that, at least.
Yeah, and it does seem a little bit like similar to what we talked about with the summer tour wrap up, where I was asking you guys about the kind of like hitting different shows like out of the park, you know, compared to how they typically do. Like this one, to have the first set of the first night of Dix and the second night of the first set be so different, and the second set of the first night, I think, was probably the best set, just to be able to come out and do that and then like not build up to a third night. I think it's pretty interesting and pretty different from what we've become used to over the past several years.
Right. And, you know, any group we poll is going to have very different, potentially very different opinions. I know my friend Jason thinks that the first set of second night is his favorite of the run. So it's, you know, matters of taste and whatnot, because I don't think that overall any of these sets are particularly like head and shoulders above in quality or song selection or whatever. They're actually fairly consistent through this run, I think, which to me, that's a mark of quality. I mean, except for the end of, except for set two of third night, for me, that is head and shoulders in my opinion, but that's just me.
Well, maybe we should talk about that show.
No, I don't think, I think we should just stop right here.
All right. So Matt, night three, never miss a Sunday show, especially at Dick's. You didn't, right?
I did not. I was there. And first time for me ever being in the stands for a Dix show. I've been on the field for every single Dix show that I've been to before this. But we, combination of factors, wound up getting a page side section of seats, which was awesome. I was exhausted. I'd been in Colorado for like 5 days at this point and was very tired, and it was awesome to have a seat when needed at set break and whatnot, and have a different kind of point of view than we usually do. So that was kind of cool. And then this first set, it was one of those sets, like I felt like I enjoyed it a lot while I was there. There was maybe a lot of intangentials, like, you know, having fun with friends, you know, high-fiving and stuff like that. My brother-in-law, shout out to Uncle Dan, repeat guest on the show, surprised my wife and I. We didn't think that he had a ticket, and he just showed up in the middle of the first set. So there was like some cool things like that happened. But when I went back to re-listen to it, I didn't find a whole lot there that grabbed me, except for the Wolfman's and the Bathtub Gin, which, once again, like I said earlier, like good stuff, maybe not great, with some highlights, but the highlights are really awesome. And this was two fantastic jams in the Wolfman's and the Bathtub Gin.
I watched this one from home and have been back to it one time since. And I definitely agree that Wolfman's is where the show really gets going. Turtle in the Clouds, Stray Dog, which Plague Dog, if you will, Stealing Time, that stuff was fun and fine, but Wolfman's goes. They really get into it, and it's outstanding, I thought. Nice, another nice, deep, but not overlong first set jam. And then I actually like the rest of the set. I like the song selection of Birds with the, you know, the quotes from the Birds, which are given now with Birds of a Feather. We are come to outlive our brains, which is just fun to say out loud, no matter what the quality of the song is. all of it, I really like that. 20 years later, even although Sparkle was like, really? Aren't we done? I felt like at that point, the set started to feel like we're just playing more songs. But then Jin closed it out beautifully. So I did enjoy that set. I had a good time watching it. But I'm here to talk about the next one. But RJ, what did you think of set one?
Yeah, the Wolfman's and the Jin were both amazing. I felt the Wolfman's jam was like very soulful. I thought a lot of jams from this weekend like had a lot of like vibes, positive vibes. It felt like like Tedeschi Trucks sort of positive vibes almost. I wonder if like part of Trey's playing was kind of reflective of that. You know those Tedeschi Trucks jams that are just like you just feel happy in your soul? Like I felt a lot of those. Yeah. Like a lot of these jams, including Wolfman's, felt like that to me. And the Gin was really good too. Interesting that two big, like, first set jams like that appeared in the same first set, you know? I feel like that doesn't happen that often, but a lot of songs, but two really, really good ones. So set two. So is opening set two of Sunday Night at Dick's with a debut, is that like a awesome ballsy move, or is that, did that kind of like start us off on the wrong foot?
It was an awesome ballsy move. It could have been a little bit better. And the only reason I say that is because they had sound checked Sightless Escape both Saturday and Sunday. So we kind of knew this was coming. I thought it was really, really well executed. It's one of my favorite songs from the Ghost of the Forest set. The funny thing is that I feel like it's going to be a big jam vehicle someday. The groove is just like perfect for them to kind of launch off of. So when they started playing it, I was like, oh, okay, they're going to like debut this and they're going to take this long and we're going to be really impressed with it. And then it just sort of like very suddenly stopped after like 7 minutes or so. So I think we'll see a lot more from that on fall tour and over the New Year's run. We'll probably see a big version of that after they play it a couple times. I was listening to it. Do you guys hear, like, do you remember the old HBO theme?
Oh, yeah.
It's, I hear that at the beginning of Sightless Escape. It always makes me think of that.
Trey teases that at the Ian's Farm 52889 in Mike's song.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
So
so this was really good. It was well played. I think it's of the Ghost of the Forest songs, it's one of the best suited for Phish to play, with the exception of the fact that it loses some of its punch without having the female backup vocals. Not quite as strong there. I think we need ladies for Ghost of the Forest to really, really shine, as we've seen a couple times now. But really good, and I look forward to Sightless Escape opening some second sets in a big way in the future.
Agreed.
Yeah, so then what happened, Jonathan? Anything?
Well, then we all turned off our internets and Phish was done, right? No, they played Fuego, which I know some people don't love Fuego, but I'm cool with Fuego, and they stretched this one. And they not only stretched it, but then they eventually eased into almost a slow build Piper, which was nice, but you know, it didn't get as long as you'd want as they patiently entered the song. Then they dove into Tweezer.
Thank you.
back for the red, red one. Walk last night to the sound of the storm. World's words I sail upon. Pop up, back for the red, red one. Walk last night to the sound of the storm. World's words I sail upon. Pop up, back for the red, red one. Walk last night to the sound of the storm. World's words I sail upon. Pop up, back for the red, red one. Walk last night to the sound of the storm.
I think I have a slightly different take on that.
Okay.
Fuego. Fuego is like perfect for Dix, especially on the third night. Just have this big stadium rock sing along, hands in the air, you know, lights lighting up the whole crowd. It's just like Fuego is made to be played at Dix. It's like the most appropriate venue that they play, other than maybe like a festival scenario where it's just like absolutely perfect. And it was really good. Although it was, you know, relatively kind of standardish, kind of Fuego. The thing about the Piper, there was a nice segue into it, but where I think you can hear a slow build, I kind of hear the band struggling to get into the song. It's like they never quite grasped the groove and the build of Piper, and like they tried for a couple of minutes and they couldn't really connect, and then all of a sudden they're just like, fuck it, let's jam instead, and they just kind of like veer into a jam. Now the jam is really good. It's a very like I felt like in the second set, this third night, there was a lot of like really patient, open space laden jamming where they weren't driving forward as much, but being very patient, listening to each other. And I think you hear that here. Fish is grooving really, really hard while the rest of the band just sort of adds nice little flourishes over that. But while the jam was great, the actual song part of the Piper I felt was just like a little bit of a miss. I don't know, RJ, if you heard that or if you agree that we got the majestic slow build Piper we've always been waiting for.
I agree with both of you guys.
I want to say, I'm not saying they nailed a majestic slow build Piper. In fact, I think I started by saying they didn't really get there, but they did go slower than a lot of Pipers have been in the past few years.
Yeah. I didn't hear the missing it part, but I did hear like the slow to get into it part. So I think you guys both have good points, but let's talk about Tweezer. Tweezer's cool.
yeah, it's okay.
I guess, Matt, at a third night of any run, this is what people are waiting for, right? I mean, at any show. It actually, maybe that's just me.
Yeah, it actually reminded me a lot of Sunday Dicks last year. How they played Tweezer, but it was a little bit of an awkward entry to it, and then the jam was very, very like rhythmic, more than melodic. We heard last year, which was like very based on like the cowbell and stuff like that. This was more just kind of following Fishman around, which you know they should because he's playing so great right now. But not like a typical Tweezer that at a certain point kind of picks up and gets funky and driving. It just had this sort of jerky kind of rhythmic quality to it, which gave way to, once again, here's ambient space with some of the amazing new synth tones for a couple of minutes, and then just like a perfect drop into 2001. So I like this. I like that segment a lot. Not my favorite Tweezer, but a really, really fun segment of music.
So in that later part of that jam, they started doing some Fuego lyrics, right? And then,
yeah, that's right.
And then Mike popped up the drill, and to my ears, they basically ended Fuego. When he starts playing the drill, that's the ending of Fuego right there. And then 2001, nobody wrote it down, but I wrote it down on Twitter somewhere, but
you're absolutely right. I forgot about that. Which, it kind of like there was almost like a Weegapog reprise the night before, Come Out of Disease. Right. I felt it was like the same kind of thing. Like it was like not exactly Fuego, but it was like a Fuego reprise. And you're right, the drill popped out at that point too, which kind of, typically end it.
Exactly. So they ended Fuego finally, instead of leaving it completely unfinished, and then 2001, which was a cool pickup after the spacier jamming from Tweezer there. RJ?
Yes. The Chalk Dust Torture, I mean, 2001 is fine. It's always fine. It's always like the same, and it's cool, and it's especially cool if you're there, and listening to it is fine, I think. But the Chalk Dust, late second set Chalk Dust that I thought was like, when I listened to it, I did not expect it to go where it went, which I thought was kind of cool. And you know, this is probably just me reading into things. But it just seemed like they were like, oh shit, we're nearing the end here. Let's like keep jamming. You know, cause to play Chalk Dust at that point, I kind of figured that it would go, you know, into a bunch of other songs, but it was pretty stretched out. I think they were holding on to the rest of the night. That was my interpretation hearing that jam, which I thought was really good. And then into Waste as a cool down.
Yeah, the Chalk Dust, the feeling around me was everybody kind of looked at each other and said, all right, we're going to get a jammed out Chalk Dust here, potentially to stretch it out to end the set, was kind of what I was thinking at that point. As far as the jammed out Chalk Dust go, it's kind of unique. So go back to what I was saying before about like, you know, kind of laying back, lots of space in the playing, nobody being too aggressive, nobody driving things forward, just sort of patiently building something, which you don't always hear in the Chalk Dust where they are usually trying to push it and kind of rage a little bit more. And then there was this like cowbell section from Fishman that almost sounded like All Things Reconsidered, the way that he was hammering away on the cowbell before it kind of gave way to Waste, the sort of Waste Cavern first tube, you know, let's finish the set kind of thing.
And so in terms of the encore, we talked about the Life Beyond the Dream. Matt, were you enjoying that more than everyone else? Were people like, what was it like on the, you know, encore last night? Was it like grade three shows, close it out, you guys are the best? Or was it like, shit, man, another Ghost of the Forest song?
So let me walk through the encore. So first off, Horse into Silent in the Morning. They played this, off the top of my head, I want to say they played this in the encore in the last night of Dicks last year. And I think they've done this at a bunch of tour closers. And I kind of was like, why the hell are they playing this in the encore of the last show they're going to play for months? And maybe you guys are going to call me an idiot for this. I suddenly realized why they play the Horse on the last night of tours. The lyrics are perfect. Have you guys thought about that before?
Yeah. It's been noticed, I think, by a few people.
So I kind of had my mind blown by that. I was like, whoa, the time I sling the baskets over the server, overburdened horse, sink my feet into the ground and set a different course. Oh my God. Yeah. So that was my, I went from like, I like this song, but why are they playing it right now? To like, holy shit, this is the most perfect song to play right now. And then once they did Horse Silent in the Morning, everybody, you feel the Twee prize looming. And I was looking at my watch. It was about 11:45 at this point, and I turned to my friends and I said, "You know what? I bet they're going to play Yem right now." And mm-hmm. they didn't. They went with The Life Beyond the Dream and Twee's Reprise, which was fine. But back to your question before, you know, A Life Beyond the Dream, there was a little bit of like a high five moment at the beginning, and I think that's because of the Susan Tedeschi version that had come at lock-in, that people listened to that and were like super into it and kind of pumped for it again. And then Tweezer Reprise, one of the stronger versions I've heard of Tweezer Reprise. I usually measure it on how earth-shattering is the mic bass note, and it was quite earth-shattering on this night. So it was locked in, and they did it right.
I want to interject that Trey played horse. You know, we've had a lot of Paige playing horse in the past few years, but Trey played it and well. So, you know, for all of the flub knockers out there, they'll probably find one in this that I missed. But I think he played it well, and it was quite nice to hear.
I think we've coined a new term.
Yeah, flub knockers.
We're gonna
hashtag. I can't even say it. It's so weird.
This is
hashtag
so good.
Flub knockers.
First micro jam. Now this. Thank you, Jonathan. So Matt, what one takeaway from this run?
You know, nothing. Good. Not great. I think there was consistent playing. There was strong playing. I didn't get that feeling throughout the weekend like you get when they're playing at a super elevated level. But there was some moments when I felt like they were doing some really cool stuff. It kind of like I've said before, like I feel like New Year's runs a lot of time almost feel to me like greatest hits of the year. Like they try to like, you know, re-encapsulate everything they did that year. This kind of felt like that with the summer. Like they did a lot of new material. The jamming was sort of a consistent style. Some of the stuff was a little flubby. Some of the jams were a little bit predictable, but overall you can't really ding them for bad playing or anything like that. So, and then, you know, the experiential thing of it's Dick's, tons of friends there. It's a great environment. I mean, honestly, if you've never been to Dick's before, like I shouldn't be saying this because tickets are tough enough as it is, but you owe it to yourself to go to Dick's. It is a really great experience. You'd never think that you could have such a great concert going experience in a soccer stadium, but it's really fantastic. And shout out to all of the people that work at Dick's. You know, we see this at Madison Square Garden too, but the people there are just fantastic. They love having us there. From, you know, the cops and the security guards and the food vendors and everybody working there is just so awesome to deal with. And so we really, we owe all of them a lot for, you know, creating such a great experience for all of us.
To me, like back to sort of what I quoted from someone on Twitter at the beginning, I think you're right, Matt, about it being similar to summer, but I don't like agree with the recapping, I guess. It all felt very original, you know, with the good and the bad. Debuts, new songs, you know, the proportion of new material that they're playing is just incredible this far into their career, and I feel like these three shows were good reminder of that, along with some good, really good jams. Jonathan, what about you?
You know, I think I fall somewhere in between you guys. I think they were good. I don't have any reason to say they were not great. I think they were good Fish shows. Three good Fish shows is it's a treat. And yeah, I think they built on the summer. They didn't necessarily build super far beyond the summer, but there were new jams, there were new flubs, there was, you know, good times were had, and there will be more in the fall.
So we appreciate you guys joining. I just want to say, you heard this at the very top of the episode, but we are sponsored by SiriusXM. You know you can listen to Fish Radio on SiriusXM along with Jam On, Grateful Dead Radio, Pearl Jam Radio, Tom Petty Radio, lots and lots of other stations. And you don't need a car. You can subscribe to listen outside the car, on your phone, online, at home, and get your first 3 months for a dollar if you go to SiriusXM.com/HFpod. All right, guys. So we are going to be back again in a couple weeks, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Makes sense.
We have some stuff in the works that has yet to reveal itself to us, but I think there are things that we will figure out. But if you're still listening to this point and you have ideas for things you want us to cover on this show, please let us know. And you know, you can listen to this podcast on Spotify. Do you guys know that?
I do.
So you can do that. Anyone who's listening, you just, even if you just go and follow the podcast on Spotify, that'd be cool, because it helps us. So, I mean, I'm following it, so I think you guys should as well. And give us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Guys, I hope we can find Brad, you know, or he comes back eventually. But if not, you know, we'll see him. We'll see him out there. We're gonna have to go do a visit to him out on the lake.
We could task a satellite, maybe.
Yeah,
that's exactly what they do in the CIA movies.
Can we do that?
I just picture Brad like floating in a lake with like duck swimmies and like a big drink with a straw coming out of it and just loving life, man. So yeah, but you get
that sunburn on top of your hand as you hold your drink out of the water. Just right from your index finger to your thumb.
Say that from experience.
He lives in Arizona. He's used to it.
He is. All right. We'll be back. Thanks everybody for listening. Keep on rocking.
Osiris.